Hi, this is the Frihoff Institute of Progressive Halakha. I'm Rabbi Mark Wyshovsky, and this is the 12-Minute Shiur number 9, part 3 of our series Prayer in Translation. This episode is all about the Chatam Sofer. As always, the source sheet for this installment is available on the learning page at our website. Let's recap. In part 1 of the series, we learned that the Halakha, as stated in the Talmud and the major poskim, or codes, permits the recitation of both the Shema and the Tefillah in the vernacular, Bechol Lashon, in any language that one understands. In part 2, we learned that the same is true, technically, for Mikra Megillah, the reading of the scroll of Esther on Purim. It may be read, the Megillah, in translation, to those who don't understand Hebrew. But then we saw that the medieval authorities discovered a problem. There are words in the Megillah, Persian words, for which the rabbis lacked a precise understanding or translation. So when we read the Megillah in translation, we can't be sure that we're accurately rendering all of its text into the vernacular. So they ruled that to make sure we fulfill the mitzvah, it is better to read the Megillah in the original and then explain the text to those who don't understand Hebrew. Now we move on to the early 19th century, to the beginnings of the Reform movement in Europe. It was the age of emancipation, when Jews were winning their political rights and entering the surrounding culture, hopefully as full and equal participants. Traditional worship seemed foreign to these westernized Jews, and accordingly, the goal of the reformers was to create a dignified and enlightened religious observance that seemed at home in Western European culture. Since most of these Jews did not understand Hebrew, the reformers instituted a prayer service largely in the vernacular. And they justified their decision on the basis of the texts that we've studied that declare that Kriyat Shema and Tefillah, the two central elements of the service, may be recited in any language the worshiper understands. The opponents of the reformers, soon to be called Orthodox, condemned this change for all sorts of reasons, historical, cultural, psychological. But on what halachic grounds could they oppose it, given the support that it finds in the Talmud and the codes? Enter Rabbi Moshe Schreiber, or Sofer, known as the Chatam Sofer. That's him in the picture on the source sheet. He was the intellectual leader of Hungarian Orthodoxy, which was organized around a blanket rejection of all ritual reform. Sofer was one of the rabbis who wrote responsa against the changes instituted by the Reform community in Hamburg, Germany, in the latter part of the second decade of the 19th century. Our selection focuses upon his critique of prayer in the vernacular. As we'll see, the Chatam Sofer developed a new and creative halachic theory that purports to show that what we thought we knew about the law of Jewish prayer, well, it turns out we didn't know at all. So on to the source sheet, and we begin where the Chatam Sofer begins, with the Rambam's description of the history of the Tefillah, at least as it's understood through the rabbinic sources. In his Hilchot Tefillah in the Mishneh Torah, at the very beginning, we're in lines 3 and 8 on the source sheet, the Rambam tells us, Mitzvat aseh lehitpalel b'chol yom. It is a positive commandment of the Torah to pray every day, as it is said, Va'avadetem et Hashem Elohechem, in Exodus 23, you shall serve or perform avodah to Adonai your God. The oral tradition tells us that this avodah is prayer, as it is said, as it's written in the book of Deuteronomy, Ula'ovdo b'chol levavachem, you shall serve or perform avodah to God with all your heart. The sages ask, what is this avodah of the heart? It is prayer. Rambam then goes on to say that the Torah does not specify the number of prayers to be recited daily. It does not establish Mishneh HaTfilah, the text of the prayer, nor does it fix a time of day for prayer. So originally, people could recite Tefillah and fulfill the mitzvah of the Torah, according to the Rambam, however they chose to do so. There was no particular text and obviously no set language for prayer. But things changed. In paragraph 4 of that chapter, the Rambam goes on and tells us that when Israel was exiled during the days of the evil Nebuchadnezzar, the Jews mixed among the peoples of Persia, Greece, and the other nations. Their children, born in those foreign lands, spoke a mixed language composed of elements taken from the languages of the nations that surrounded them. The result was that none of them could speak properly in any one language, and he offers a proof text, right? So it turns out, in line 33, that when any one of them prayed, that person could not present their supplications or pronounce the praises of the Kadosh Baruch Hu in Hebrew without mixing other languages into that prayer. So what happened? Ezra the scribe and his Beit Din therefore resolved to establish a prayer text, an order of 18 benedictions, that's the number Shmona Esrei, which is given as another name for the tefillah, so that every person, including those whose speech was deficient, could offer a prayer that was just as fluent as the prayer of those gifted in speech. Right, so the Ezra and his Beit Din created a prayer text. Now, along comes the Hatam Sofer in his responsum to the Hamburg Temple reform, which was to establish liturgy in the vernacular. And he tells us, Lehit Palel, this is line 43 and line 47, Lehit Palel b'tzibul b'lashon she'enu lashon ha'kodesh. There is no way to permit the recitation of the synagogue tefillah in any language other than Hebrew. And here's an important note. Whenever the Hatam Sofer says Hebrew in our translation, the words he uses are Lashon HaKodesh, the holy tongue. He doesn't use the word Ivrit. He says Lashon HaKodesh, the holy language, which suggests, of course, that Hebrew occupies a level far above all other languages. He goes on in line 48, if the Mishnah speaks of liturgy that may be recited b'chol lashon, in any language, as we saw in Mishnah Sotah, and if this includes the tefillah that fulfills one's obligation to pray, well, that Mishnah is referring to prayer recited on an occasional basis, b'akrai. That is, if somebody happens to be away from the synagogue, doesn't have a minyan, it's time to say, I don't know, mincha, and you need to say tefillah, and you don't have the text, you haven't memorized, you can say a text, a prayer text in your own language and get away with it. But it cannot refer to regular public prayer in which the shaliach tzibur recites the tefillah in a foreign tongue. Line 57, because if that were the case, that is, if formal synagogue prayer could be recited in any language, then the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, the members of the Great Assembly, which is pretty much the same thing as what Rambam calls Ezra and his Beit Din, they would not have created a prayer text in clear and intelligible Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh. As Rambam tells us, the people at that time spoke a patois of languages, so it would have been better to have composed the prayer text in Chaldean, the language most widely spoken at the time. And look, he says, continuing this line of thought in line 71, we read as well that when the Torah was read in those days, a meturgeman, a translator, would offer an Aramaic targum or translation on the spot. We learn from this that the people didn't know Hebrew. If so, if they didn't know Hebrew, then why didn't the members of the Great Assembly compose the tefillah in Aramaic, that is, the language they understood? Well, they didn't do that. Rather, we have to conclude that they intentionally composed a Hebrew text because the prayer that an individual might recite in some other language could not compensate for the absence of the temple service. They composed a text as best they could in a relatively simple language, that is, words known to all, as the Hatam Sofer says, that included proper intentions to compensate for that absence. In other words, the Hatam Sofer is working with a very specific understanding of the ritual and halachic role of the tefillah. It's not simply a supplication that you or I might offer before God. It is a ritual act tantamount to the temple service, Avodat Beit HaMikdash, and that makes an important difference. They, the members of the Great Assembly in line 88, took a formal decision. That's the Hebrew word nimnu. They made a formal decision about each and every word and each and every letter of the prayer. It is impossible to translate their intention into another language. But when we recite their text in their language, even if we don't know precisely the meaning they intended to convey, our prayer is still acceptable in fulfillment of the mitzvah, which is not the case when we recite the tefillah in a foreign tongue. You see how he's adopting the reasoning that the Rishonim used with Mikra Megillah, right? Translation is never precise, so that a translated version of a text cannot be the equal of the original text. You're better off sticking with the original. Now, if we're concerned in line 93 that the uneducated do not understand what they're saying in Hebrew, they can always learn the meaning of the words, right? It's better that they pray in Hebrew rather than establish a prayer for them in another language. Now, the Chatam Sofer goes on, line 106, after all, we wouldn't conduct ourselves that way before an earthly king. One who wishes to speak to the king will do so in the king's own language. As Ramban writes in his commentary, that Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, is the language in which the Holy One speaks to God's prophets. Thus, it would not be fitting for us to speak in any other language before God. So as the Chatam Sofer concludes, it would appear that this was the opinion of the members of the Great Assembly when they established the text of the Tefillah and the Brachot in Hebrew. It is wrong to change this. It is right to hold on to the words of the sages and to the minhag of our ancestors. So what do we see in the Chatam Sofer? We see the basis of his new halakhic theory is this. In the Talmud, in Bavli Sota 33a, tefillah is considered rachame, a heartfelt supplication to God, which is why it may be recited in a language that the worshiper understands. But for the Chatam Sofer, as we've seen here, tefillah is not primarily the expression of one's heart and soul, but a text, the literary product of a group of authors that arguably, like any text, cannot be translated with precision. The same would clearly apply to Kriyat Shema, which of course is a text. For this reason, and despite the clear and obvious declaration of the Talmud in the Poskim, you cannot recite the Shema or the synagogue tefillah in any language other than the Hebrew in which they were originally composed. It would seem that Sofer is drawing here upon the thinking that led those medieval authorities to rule that despite what the Talmud says, you can't successfully fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah by reading a translation. Nobody prior to Rabbi Moshe Sofer had ever applied that thinking to the daily liturgy. The irony, and don't you just love irony, is that in the service of upholding the traditional practice, Sofer creates a chidush, a brand new halachic theory, a creative theory, in order to overturn the halachic standard that had been agreed upon for well over 1,000 years. So we may well ask, who in this case are the real guardians of tradition? Sofer and his orthodox allies who rely on a creative theory, or the reformers whose innovations follow the clear and plain meaning of the texts? Now, if you'd like to read more about this topic or in more detail about this topic, you'll find a link to an article on the source sheet. In the meantime, this has been the 12-Minute Shiur number 9 from the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. Lehitraot.